July 3, 2021, it's the Watt for Pedro Show.
Thank you.
Watt for Pedro show. Started off, well, happy Saturday, people. Started off with the John Coltrane and Freight Train, and then Lossage with No Fair. Brother Matt's doing the Love Grud on the Pleasure Point. We're going to do a collab with Crane up in Idaho, something called Pictures from the Pleasure Point. You might hear other sounds, and that's from those Estonian software engineers with their Skype invention. Yeah, I'm honored to have Kyle Bruckman. Welcome aboard, Kyle.
Thanks, Mike. It's great to be here.
Absolutely. We got to thank the Brutal Sound Effects crew for the connect.
Yes, indeed.
Okay. Really interesting stuff you flowed me, and I'm curious about your journey through music, so please bring us your earliest musical recollection, Kyle.
Oh,
remember, it's a Watt from Pedro show. There's no hard questions, and there's no wrong answers.
Well, that, I don't know if I can... If I can pinpoint the earliest, because, you know, I'm one of those spoiled brats that I've always had music in the house and in my life. My parents were always listening to the radio and records, and, you know, I guess they had a dream of bringing their kids up cultured or something. But the first most crucial moment I can call up is like, when I was 6 years old, this is when my actually playing and studying music really started in earnest. Friends of my parents that they'd gone to their college buddies, basically, the couple, they were an organ repairman and an organ teacher. And they ran this like mighty Wurlitzer palace on Long Island. And we would like every year we would kind of trade homes for Thanksgiving. We would go back and forth and do the family holiday thing. And I don't know why it hit me that year, but when I was 6 years old, you know, this was mid 70s and like a quarter of their living room was filled up with this humongous, Wurlitzer, you know, this big organ that, you know, now is just would be cheesy as hell. But at that point, it was the coolest toy I'd ever seen. It was like an arcade game, except it, you know, you could choose what noises it made, flashing lights, bossa nova beats and the whole deal. And I remember announcing to my parents, like, I want one of these. And they're like, are you serious? Well, maybe if you actually practice every day and take lessons, if you promise to do that, we'll consider it. And the family lore, at least, is that I kind of pouted a little bit and said, okay, I'll think about it. And the next morning I came down, I was like, okay, it's a deal. So that was really the beginning of the journey for me. And the only reason it was organ rather than piano lessons was just that freak accident of who my parents were friends with.
Right, because the instrument was actually in their pad, not your family's pad.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Okay, so that's the way life is, you know?
Mm-hmm.
It deals your hand. And okay, so what's the experience with the organ lesson teacher?
I mean, for me, it was good.
Good,
you know?
Good.
It's like,
I'm happy to hear that. You know, there is a lot of nightmare on my show from guests with the piano lesson thing, but not always.
Yeah, no, I know. It can definitely ruin it for people.
I think it really has to do with the technique or lack of technique or empathy or shit like that from the teacher.
Yeah.
Not the device.
Yeah. And, you know, I've always had at least a dual personality, especially at that age. I was very much a good boy and a teacher's pet. You know, I had no problem with doing what I was supposed to, as long as it was something that I was invested in, you know, as long as it's something that I decided, like, okay, this is worth it. This is interesting to me, so I'm going to play whatever this game is.
That's so great. So
the lesson's totally connected for me. I loved it. I kept that up, like, even into high school.
Well, let's talk about school. Were you, besides the home with the organ and the lessons, were you in the marching band or the choir or shit like that?
Oh, yeah, all of it. All of it. And I was enough of a brat that, like, I was never super competitive about it. I mean, I was motivated, but I wasn't, like, one of these kids that freaked out and it was the end of the world if I didn't make Allstate. And, you know, part of it was just because I was privileged. I was blithe. I was lucky. So I, like, the year that I didn't make Allstate on band, I made it in choir. So it's like, okay, I still get to make music and hang out with my friends. So good enough.
Now, I'm curious. Okay, choir, you're using your voice, but you didn't use the organ in the other school stuff, right?
No. So that's the thing. I was in a I went to school. My colleagues and I, you know, cohort. It's weird. It's like I am also, my day job is playing classical oboe, believe it or not. So it's very weird.
No, I'm way fucking into it, man. Andy McKay, we're going to play some with John Wetton. I mean, anybody who rocks the oboe in some rock and roll song that's with a bitchin' bass is almost heaven for me.
Awesome. So, yeah, I mean, that's the weird part. It's like a lot of folks in the experimental music scene, I don't run into a lot of people who are also straight-laced, you know, bow-tie musicians, and I try to have it both ways. But
can I ask you this, Kyle?
Yeah.
Do you have kind of an opinion that music is music?
Oh, hell yes.
Okay, so maybe there ain't. It shouldn't be weird.
No, you're right. And, well, yeah, we can get as deep into the many random detours as you have patience for. But, like, the oboe thing just started in fourth grade. You know, I feel like I'm maybe one of the last generations of kids who were lucky enough to have, like, a really strong public school band program just fully available. Sorry, I'll mute for a second if that keeps up.
No, but that's you're right about that. You know, people like Charlie Mingus and Eric Dolphy, you know, these guys come out of public school here in SoCal.
Yeah, totally.
And that got lost. And in fact, that's why Flea started his Silver Lake Conservatory of Music, because when he went back to Fairfax High, where he learned trumpet, they had gotten rid of the program.
Oh, yeah. I mean, there's been a war on that for decades now, but that was kind of the last the last straw. Sorry, yeah. I'm gonna just
or just sit on the motherfucker. That's a real butt dial. Can I ask you, what was the first record you bought with your own money?
Well, let's see. It's like when my sister's 2 years younger than me, and when we were kids, like my dad started like signing up for like the Sony Columbia tape club.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, and if
mine was eight tracks for a dime.
Oh my god! Wow. I'm slightly too young for that, but it was this thing where if you got a certain number of tapes, you could throw in one more for a penny.
Yeah.
And my dad would always let my sister and I choose them, and it's hilarious to me when I think back, because when I was like, you know, 10, 11, it was like ABBA, Billy Joel, you know, stuff that I cringe about now. But when adolescence hit, I mean, I was super lucky that there was a college radio station in the town where I grew up, and just starting to catch on to that stuff. I think the first one I might have bought was Talking Heads' Remain in Light, and that's like an album I still listen to.
That's a good one. That's the Brian Eno one, right? With the, you know, kind of funky thing going on. Even more. Yep. They always had a funky thing. We're going to have that fucking ring in the whole show. Huh? Okay.
Yeah, I'm sorry. Okay. I'm glad I can be here at all. It's crazy. We're doing like a family camping thing with a bunch of friends. Our first time in the woods, and I'm in the supply room in the back of the main office of the campground right now, because they had Ethernet they let me plug into.
Sure. It's a good connect.
The
other question I want to ask about something like that. See, I asked with your own money, because you, when you're a kid, you ain't got a lot of money, so it's trippy.
Right.
Like, yeah. Now, the other one is, what's the first gig you saw, Kyle?
Well, you know, my parents would take us to all sorts of classical concerts and everything when we were kids. The first, like, show, you know, capital S show, there was a band. Okay, I grew up in Danbury, Connecticut, and it's...
Danbury!
Yeah.
Yeah, Thurston Moore.
You know, I just learned a couple days ago that he lived in Bethel, and that blew my freaking mind.
Yeah.
I never knew
also, that. Joe Bouchard, the drummer, the bass man of Blue Oyster Cult.
Oh, my God.
There was a club there called Penguins or something I played, and Joe Bouchard came on stage.
This was
30 years ago or something. Danbury, what a trip.
Yeah, so I was born in 71, so like by the time puberty hit and the punk rock thing captured my imagination, it's like hardcore had pretty much played out, but it was still kind of dragging along in its weird zombie form by that And, I mean, it, you know, and thank God it changed my life, you know, but the big bands in town at that point when I was like 13 years old, you know, bands that I just barely was aware of, No Milk on Tuesday was one, Mental Abusement Park. Yeah. I don't think I ever even heard them, but I had this t-shirt that I won on the college radio station. It was like a hardcore show, and I called in and I got a Mental Abusement Park t-shirt, and I wore it for decades and turned it into cheesecloth.
Sometimes that's how hardcore was. The band name was better. Yep, sometimes yep, the music yep, yep. got so generic. Nothing against the attitude, but the form got a little generic. But the band names were great. I remember we shared the stage with the band in the city. They were called Uncle Bob Touched Me. You know, I want to play something you gave me from Degradient.
Okay, cool. We'll be right back.
Thank you.
Watt for Pedro show, that chunk of music started off with Degrading, with, yeah, speaking of good band names, Truncations, Deletions. Yeah, that's about sums it up. You know. And then Needles, Nails, Live, One. This is Victoria Shin. She debuted her invention where she put styluses on her port hand, like four styluses on the four nails, you know. Oh, and, yeah. And then we had Mir, something brand new from DK, not Dead Kennedys, people. This cat, he's overseas. music man. And then, again, some new stuff from over there. Sophie Dupalais, I think she's in Holland. Smash the Mirror. And then now, this is Marissa from Screaming Shemales. She's gone solo in the shade. Port Sunshine out of Hamburg with Dark Chocolate Cherry. Bomb is printing out of D.C. Please leave the mall now. That's a good time. And Roxy, and then, like I said, Roxy Music featured John Wetton. You know, out of the blue, 1975. Like, he did a tour with Roxy. I think maybe they made an album out of one, Viva or something like this. But this was just from that tour, a bootleg thing. And just, you know, he was monster sound and some of that King Crimson and just him doing the Roxy stuff. But, man, what always freaked me out was, you know, hearing him and that P-bass overdriven and bitching Jack Bruce kind of. Mm-hmm. Well, it was John Wetton playing, but, you know, we all owe Jack Bruce and James Jamerson, right? Both those daddies. There must be an oboe cat like that sensei that y'all look.
Oh, yeah.
But anyway, then you'd see him, and he's in fucking designer jeans, you know, body shirt, and blow-dry hair. It was like, whoa. But that was just to keep me in check, you know. Thank you, Mr. Wetton, for doing that. It was just a beautiful guy, and so. Oboe people can rock. I mean, you listen to that. And then finally, Kyle Brookman with Bunker Hunker Communique B2. Now, double reed, right?
There's
another double reed thing called bassoon. And you know how usually the cliche is you got the angels, and if there's music involved, they got harps, right? Well, you go to that fucking Mr. Gaudi's church in Barcelona, what the Familia Sagrada, the family blood. You know, it's got like fucking fruit baskets at the top. Well, the angels there are rocking bassoons, not harps.
That's amazing.
Yeah. That so next amazing. Time you're there, check that out and tell everybody Watt told you.
All right. I will do that.
Me and Brother Steve McKay saw that as Stooges thing and was like, yes, thank you, Mr. Gaudi. So continue on with your, like, this merging of organ, oboe, hardcore. It's all leading up to your music thing. I mean, did you ever get into the garage band, basement band, bedroom band? Not after school, like graduate, but afternoon.
Yeah. There was a band in high school. And again, this was, like, partially the era and partially just me being perverse. And it was like, well, I want to be in a hardcore band. But the hardcore kids that I see kind of scare me. I'm not into the fist fight thing. That's a little too macho for me. I don't play guitar. Maybe, but I have.
You know, organ. I think they, Kyle, I think they also called that dancing. It was a form of dancing.
Well, that's okay. So, you know,
beating the shit out of each other. That's why there was not many girls involved.
Yeah. Well,
I gotta tell you, because the 70s punk scene. Which the city actually had a bigger scene than we did, right? New York had the biggest. Yeah. Yeah. It was more women than guys because it came from glitter and glam. But when it came to hardcore, that whole dynamic changed, man.
It did. And actually, let's rewind just for a second to the first show thing, just because that was the first show that I like remember going to was No Milk on Tuesday, right? That was like one of the local bands, and I just remember being just totally beside myself. It was me and 10 of my high school friends and whatever the small cadre of, like, you know, 20, 25-year-old punks in town. And I don't remember where it was. It was probably like a VFW or something like that. And we were just so giddy trying out our mosh moves and wearing our dog chains and all the stuff we'd been reading about, Maximum Rock and Roll.
Yeah,
we
got
to do it in real life, you know.
Scene report.
Yeah, exactly. But, this was like 84, 85? You know, it had already
been. There were still Minutemen in that time.
It is true. But like, you know, for where I was, this was also, okay, the other big band in town when I was a teen was Violent Children. And I mean, they were, you know, formulaic, but great, just totally amazing band. And if anybody knows anything about them now, it's because Ray Capo, the lead singer, went on to form Youth of Today and then Shelter.
Oh, yeah.
So, yeah. So, you know, again, no disrespect to him or them, but you want to talk about formulas, you know, suddenly like the straight edge thing turned into this cult.
Yeah, yeah.
And, you know, new rules kept getting added all the time. And I saw that happening. And more of the, like the couple of shows that I did go to when I was young, I tried to see Circle Jerks and my ride had to go home because he had to work the next morning. So I only saw the 18 opening bands, but did not ever see the Circle Jerks. I was totally into the moshing and everything. But then when I started figuring out, it's like, wait a minute, these kids in the audience are like, there's this scary thing going on with what color your bootlaces are and yeah. whether you're white power or white pride or whether you're sharp. And I just didn't want to have anything to do with
that. Yeah, yeah. And you know, look, the heartbreak goes back 1955 or something. Little Richard selling less Tutti Frees and Pat Boone. I mean, the humans will do shit like this.
Yep. Yeah. So like with that kind of.
So movements get co-opted that have really good ethics, right, to begin with, and then get co-opted by some lame-ass herd mentality.
Oh, yeah, of course. But, you know, you go that, and that's, if anything, it was an advantage to me that I caught on a little bit too late and a little bit too outside, so I could pick and choose.
Also, Kyle, I got to tell you, a farmer would probably enlighten us to the fact, if you want a good crop, use a lot of fucking manure. Bring it, motherfucker.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, and for God's sake, crossbreed your plants too.
Purity is the enemy. What a fuck. Oh, the acorn never falls from the tree. Bullshit. That tree wants a squirrel to eat that acorn and shit it out a mile away.
Yeah.
Motherfuckers with their fucking ethnic cleansing. Okay.
It was like in that context, you know, seeing how weird and macho and formulaic hardcore almost instantly became, for me it was like a natural decision. It's like, all right, I'm gonna be an asshole. I want to start a hardcore band, but I'm gonna use a synthesizer because you can't do that. You're not supposed to do that. So let me try.
See how fucked up that is. Because the first band that could sell out the Whiskey in 70s punk was the Screamers, which was synth. Right.
Exactly.
See, hardcore had lost, but you can't. You're also talking about young people, and where? How do you know history when you're really young? You don't know.
Right. Yeah. I didn't catch on to Screamers and Suicide or the Units or any of that stuff until
Nervous Gender.
Yep. I didn't hear any of that stuff until even like just 10 years ago.
You know what? Nervous Gender was out of fucking East LA too.
Yep.
You know what I mean? The movement actually came out of all kinds of weird places. It wasn't just white suburb. Exactly. Nothing wrong with that either. I mean, it's all fair game for me. But if you kind of know, I think that keeps the mind open a little bit. But you can't know. It's a process, right? So there was a band in the city. They had this their Black Humor, right? They had this chorus. The only thing new is you. Find it out about it.
Yeah. Yeah, what really trips me out in retrospect, too, is looking back at, like, all the stuff that just seemed like gospel to me as a teenager, just realizing how fast it happened too. You know?
Right.
It's like you only
absolutely
have to rewind a tiny bit and you're like, wait a minute, it was like Bad Brains and the Big Boys and then you get Black and you got queer, right?
Yeah,
like, right off the bat. And when did that get erased?
I know. Yeah. Well, you know, I think things changed a lot quicker then too.
Yeah.
It just seems, and then it kind of plateaued out, especially as 90s and 2000s came. It's not bad, it's just the way things worked out. But in the early days when things changed, some things only lasted a couple weeks.
Mm-hmm.
Or a couple months. Yeah, it was trippy.
Yeah, and now they finally get their first ever vinyl-only release on 180-gram vinyls for $30, right?
Good point. We're at the end of the first hour, July 3, 2021 edition. Watt Peters, a special guest, Kyle Brookman, Hold Tight for Hour 2. July 3, 2021, is the second hour of the Watch for Pedro show.
The efforts failed to dissipate.
Furthest from the tree. should have been a brave knight, winning your battles, so gather. But we've all got a chip in the armor, and we've all got an itch we've got to scratch. Sometimes that itch will become an irritation, and that itch will become a rash. Load out at 45, put the car home and drive. There's no chance in looking back, there's no rearview mirror in this life. Hope we've all got a chip in the armor, and we've all got an itch we got to scratch. Sometimes that itch will become an irritation, and that itch will become a rash. So I'll keep playing the numbers game just to stop myself going insane. Keep playing the numbers game just to stop myself.
What did she ever?
Pedro Show started the second hour off of Pink Mountain, Over the Rainbow Somewhere. Can't copyright a title, people, but Brother Kyle did better than that. He arranged the fucking spiel. Ben Salter from Tasmania with Dissipation. And then nearby Sydney, Lucas Abella. This just came out in March. Virga. I love his shit. Tim Hall, Outside of England with Numbers Game. Are You a Cop? Last song from their new album, Seatbelt. And then finally, something called Rack, and that's with a W, people. It's hard to see the spelling with what's mouth. Feral Glintings. That's a title. I didn't even know Glintings was a word, but it makes sense. I'm into it. So continue with your journey with the music. I mean, you go to university to further your music education?
Yeah. I wound up at a school called Rice in Houston.
Oh, yeah. I almost got to play there, but a rainstorm cut the gig.
Oh. You're right.
But the Houston underpasses, right, they didn't do overpasses. They submerged the underpasses, so when it rains hard, they all flood. Cars are floating and shit.
Mm-hmm. It's a crazy town. And it was a real culture shock for me after growing up in Connecticut. And then my parents actually moved to Dallas-Fort Worth area the summer before my senior year of high school. And I pitched a classic teenage tantrum and, you know, you're ruining my life. How can you make me move now? And we struck a bargain that I lived with old friends of the family to finish up high school. And they said, okay, but you got to go to, you got to look at colleges in Texas if you're going to do that. And totally short sighted. It was like, you know, could only see right in front of me. I had a band. I had friends. We had a zine. There was the marching band and all the band geek stuff at school too. And I was like, yeah, I'm not walking away from this. And I, you know, I look back now, it's like, am I insane? I only applied to one college. What the hell? But it worked out beautifully. I was super lucky. I mean, it helped that I was a nerd and I got good grades and stuff. But I started at Rice academically figuring I was going to major in psychology. And within the first semester, I realized it's like, okay, every class I'm taking, everything I'm just trying out that is fascinating to me, all of it is quote unquote worthless from a capitalist perspective. None of it has any market value. So if I'm going to do something that's never going to make me any money, rather than become an academic and get a PhD, I might as well do the music thing because music was always fun, you know? It's like, and I, to me, music was a playground when I was a kid. It meant I got to go on cool band trips with my friends and act like a jerk. And so I kind of saw that as like, oh yeah, I want to, music is fun, so I'm going to study music. I had no idea what I was getting myself into in terms of the field or the professional realities of it. But very suddenly I found myself surrounded by 18, 19 year olds who had essentially grown up on the back stairs of Symphony Hall in whatever city they came from. You know, it's like they already had incredibly informed opinions of their favorite recording of Brahms' Third Symphony. I didn't know any of that stuff. I had played in a youth orchestra, but it was all just kind of fun and casual for me. So it was shocking. It was a bit of a wake up call, and
are you saying kind of competitive like sports?
Sorry?
Like there's this thing, you know, I know in the jazz scene you use John Coltrane's fucking giant steps to cut each other.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
You know,
oh, yeah.
The pictures of John Coltrane with his compassionate eyes and you're using this man's music to cut each other.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and there was
that's almost worse than the sins of the hardcore we were talking about. Maybe it is worse.
Well, there was definitely a culture of that there. The other students, like, nobody was particularly nasty. It was more just that the attitude among the faculty was like, you've got to buckle down and you've got to do it and you've got to do it this way. And I wasn't really ready for that. I locked horns with my teacher and the orchestra conductor a lot. I have so much to thank them for. Now that I'm old, you know, I can look back. It's like, man.
No, really, not old, Kyle. Less younger. Less younger.
There you go. But like, it's at the time I just felt like I was swimming upstream and I didn't know what I got myself into. But thank God there was a radio station there.
College radio. That's one great thing that came from the movement.
Yep.
Yeah. Because it was Mersch. It was Mersch, man. I helped SST. I would call these guys playing fucking Journey on a college stage. Look, you gave me this thing, Baker Brookman Zarang, and I want to play Anxious Expectations of Paradise.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. Thank you.
For Pedro Show, that chunk of music started with Baker Bruckman's Zerang, Anxious Expectations of Paradise. Then Michael Christoph and Wayne Rex with the Buckfast Lay Flounce. I know about Buckfast. It's some like coffee and liquor shit out of South, you know, I think Devon part of England. And yeah, wake up. It's made by monks, too. And Decaf with She Went In and Never Came Out. And finally, Buckman Daisy with Feral. Oh, fuck, I already said that. Feral Glint. Oh, because Rat did Exasperator. That's what happened. I went and fucking mixed those. People, read the playlist because there's some pilot air going down. Yeah, I'm so sorry. Let's see if they'll fucking...
I've always been kind of an asshole with my titling, too.
No. They're, you know, with instrumental music, right, titles are, like, profound.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah,
I always bring this up, but John Coltrane calling that song Alabama, I mean, right away, you think of those poor little girls.
Yes, indeed.
Even though the technique was to follow Dr. King's phrasing, but he didn't put that title on. Wow.
Yeah.
So what are like titles for you? Do they come on last or first?
Usually last. When it's purely instrumental stuff, yeah, usually last. And I'm just
like everybody else, I'm the only motherfucker who starts songs with titles. That's why I always ask that. So go on with your thing at Rice there at the college.
Yeah, it was, I mean, really it was like that, being able to keep up that dual personality at the conservatory and at the radio station. And this was KTRU Houston. You know, this was good sir, we actually met there. There's no way in hell you would remember, but Firehose came in like 90.
Yeah, I remember. Well, there was two gigs, and one got canceled, and one we did do.
Yeah. But that was, I mean, that became my life, working that radio station. Just, I spent more time there than I did in the practice room. And, you know, at the time, my teachers were telling me, you're screwing up, you're making a mistake. But, you know, now that I look back, it's like, nope. Everything about my, well, not just my creative life, but my career now, like I couldn't do anything that I do now. That's like kind of my weird little niche. Had I not spent all that time there, I'm totally grateful for it. But yeah, the college radio was like, I mean, it was a really weird time to be in college radio. I started in 89. So like we were right in the thick of it when. Sorry, I'm going to say it, when Nevermind broke. Right? So, you know, we were like, what, we were
the
kind
worst
of
worst fucking that genre name ever. Like, what's the alternative to music? Silence?
Right.
Mr. Cage worked that out a long time ago.
Yep. And this was the joke, is that we walked in with, like, with this idea that, you know, the philosophy at the station at the time, what we would just egg each other on as DJs. You know, it's like if you like everything you played on your show, you failed. It's like you need to stretch yourself, and you need to just kind of just pull random stuff out of the stack. You need to like just do whiplash segues all over the place and just see how out you can go in terms of genre crossing. And that, you know, that infected me. That is something that really got to my core, and it's still at the center of everything I do. It's at the center of how I teach as a fancy pants college professor now too. So,
but this idea of music's music.
Yep.
And genre's fucking Berlin Walls in our goddamn heads. And
exactly.
Because if it was physical, we could take a hammer to it, but man, they're in our fucking heads. Kyle, we're at the end of the second hour. July 3, 2021, Dish Watt Pedro Show, special guest Kyle Bruckman. Hold tight for hour 3. July 3, 2021. It's the third hour of the Watford Pedro Show.
Thank you. It was the Holy Joe Rave. It was the Holy Joe Rave. brilliant red car. Five and Unleashed Freedom. 5 number 3.
Thank you.
So we start off the third hour. Sastroon from Brookman. Tom Dill. He was on the show. Great.
I just noticed that. I saw on his playlist, he billed us as Kokuo, which is a kind of a collective name we sometimes go by. It's like, oh, he might not even have put two and two together that's Tom again.
So. Oh, man. And also, there's two other cats, Hula and Nishi Smith.
Yep, okay. Kanoko Nishi Smith plays Koto. Jacob Felix Huli plays percussion. Mostly just bass drum.
Right. Okay, it's the same cats with another name. Okay.
Yep.
Okay. And then we had Check It. This is live at Target Video in San Francisco, 1980, Feb 24, part one of two. Oons, this was a proj of Zev I got from Blake Edwards, who took care of him in his last days. Zev was a huge inspiration. You know, a percussion player that'd be almost killed by his shit while he was doing the gig. One man band and just... That's when I'm, so something about 70s punk, I'm not trying, we were just lucky, you know, when you're born, right? But man, it was not just fast guitar. I was so lucky to experience it. It was like anything you could get on the fucking stage. God, we're already in the third hour and you're just out of college. But after that, what happens to, you know, a little Reader Digest here. Maybe I got to have you back on the show so you can talk more. Because all these projects you gave me, they probably all got their own story.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, every one of them. I started with Lozenge just because that was the band that I founded at Rice. That was the college band that we were all, you know, knee deep in college radio and the conservatory and listening to everything we could get our hands on. And, like, at the same time, the just, you know, crazy Texas noise rock scene was exploding all around us. And
tell me about the first Lozenge gig.
Oh man, what was the first one? I don't remember the first. Okay, I'll tell you about the last one we played in Houston before we graduated. Because we graduated, we split up for 2 years, and then we moved to Chicago to get the band back together. And so that track was from our last album that we recorded in Chicago. Anyway, I've always had bad timing. That Lozenge's last album came out after I had already moved to San Francisco. Like, totally stupid. But the last show we played before we graduated from college, we were opening for Drive Like Jehu and Superchunk.
Mac.
Yeah. And we
playing with him in Houston at Rockefeller's, I think.
Uh-huh.
No, Fitzgerald's. I'm sorry. Fitzgerald's.
Yep.
He opened up for us, Slack Motherfucker, and I asked him right then, can I cover that song?
Sweet. Yeah, we were so psyched to get that bill, and we just wanted to do something incredibly absurd and go out with we always had a really messed up, self-deprecating sense of humor, but it just, we outdid ourselves this time. My dear friend Chad, who was in a band, I'll call him out, who was obsessed with the Minutemen at that time. Sorry. But he was joking with us. He's like, oh, you know, what you guys should do is, like, you should, like, he had this fantasy of us ending the set with high-powered leaf blowers blown Captain Crunch at the faces of the audience members, and he had this like vision of it just scouring the flesh off of their skulls. And
sounds so like Gallagher.
Yep. So like, okay, cool, we'll do that. Except we couldn't find enough Captain Crunch, so we got this like generic kind of Fruit Loop stuff, and then we had this little battery-powered leaf blower. So we dramatically ended the set, like pulling the leaf blower out from behind the amps and turned it on and basically scooted the cereal along the floor towards the audience that was 20 feet away. So that's the kind of band we were.
Yeah, I guess that's the closer.
Yep.
Look, I want to play some more Pink Mountain. The Red Line, not just the Red Line.
Disappeared. An old woman planted a garden on the ground. 昔、神津の国立林に、茂林寺というお寺がありました。このお寺の和尚さんは、大層お茶の湯が好きで、いろいろと変わったお茶道具を集めて、毎日それをいじっては楽しんでいました。ある日、和尚さんは、用事があって、町へ行った帰りに、一軒の道具屋で気に入った形の茶釜を見つけました。和尚さんは早速それを買って帰って、自分の部屋に飾って、どうです、なかなかいい茶釜でしょう、と来る人ごとに見せて自慢していました。ある晩、和尚さんはいつもの通り居間に茶釜を飾ったまま、そのそばでうとうと居眠りをしていました。そのうち本当にぐっすり寝込んでしまいました。和尚さんの部屋があんまり静かなので、小僧さんたちはどうしたのかと思って、そっと障子の隙間から中を覗いてみました。すると、和尚さんのそばの布団に置いてあった茶釜が一人でにむくむくと動き出しました。おやっと思ううちに茶釜からひょっこり頭が出て、太い尻尾が生えて、四本の足が出て、やがてのそのそ部屋の中を歩き出しました。小僧さんたちはびっくりして部屋の中へ飛び込んできて、やあ大変だ、茶釜が化けた。和尚さん、和尚さん、茶釜が歩き出しましたよ、と天殿にすっとんきょうな声を立てて騒ぎ出しました。その音に和尚さんは目を覚まして、やかましい、何を騒ぐのだ、と目をこすりながら叱りました。でも和尚さんご覧なさい。ほらあの通り、茶釜が歩いていますよ。こう天殿に言うので、和尚さんも小僧さんたちの指さす方を見ますと、茶釜にはもう頭も足も尻尾もありません。ちゃんと元の茶釜になって、いつの間にか布団の上に乗って済ましていました。和尚さんは怒って、なんだ馬鹿なことを言うにも程がある。でも変だなあ、確かに歩いていたのに。こう言いながら小僧さんたちは不思議そうに寄ってきて茶釜を叩いてみました。茶釜はカンとなりました。それ見ろ、やっぱりただの茶釜だ。くだらないことを言って、せっかくいい心持ちに寝ているところを起こされてしまった。和尚さんにひどく叱られて、小僧さんたちはしょげて、ぶつぶつ小言を言いながら引っ込んで行きました。そのあくる日、和尚さんは、 せっかく茶釜を買ってきて、眺めてばかりいてもつまらない。今日は一つ使いだめしをしてやろう。と言って、茶釜に水を汲み入れました。すると小さな茶釜のくせに、いきなり手おけにいっぱいの水をがぶりと飲んでしまいました。和尚さんは少し変だと思いましたが、他に変わったこともないので、また水を入れていろりにかけました。すると、しばらくしてお尻が温まってくると、茶釜は出し抜けに、熱いと言っていろりの外へ飛び出しました。おやと思う間に、タヌキの頭が出て、四本の足が出て、太い尻尾が生えて、のこのことお座敷の中を歩き出しましたから、和尚さんは、わーっと言って思わず飛び上がりました。大変大変、茶釜が化けた、誰か来てくれ。和尚さんがびっくりして大きな声で呼び立てますと、小僧さんたちは、空来たというので、向こう鉢巻きで、ほうきやはたきを持って飛び込んできました。でももうその自分には、元の茶釜になって、布団の上に住ましていました。叩けばまた、カン、カン、となりました。和尚さんはまだびっくりしたような顔をしながら、どうもいい茶釜を手に入れたと思ったら、とんだものを背負い込んだ。どうしたものだろう、と考えていますと、門の外で、くずーい、くずーい、という声がしました。ああ、いいところにくず屋が来た。こんな茶釜はいっそくず屋に売ってしまおう。和尚さんはこう言って、早速くず屋を呼ばせました。くず屋は和尚さんの出した茶釜を手に取って、撫でてみたり、叩いてみたり、底を返してみたりした後で、これは結構高価な品物です。と言って茶釜を買って、くずかごの中に入れて持って行きました。茶釜を買ったくず屋は、家へ帰ってもまだニコニコして、これはこの頃にない掘り出し物だ。どうかして道具好きなお金持ちを捕まえて、いい値で売らなければならない。こう独り言を言いながら、その晩は大事そうに茶釜を枕元に飾ってぐっすり寝ました。すると、真夜中過ぎになって、どこかで、もしもし、くず屋さん、くず屋さん、と呼ぶ声がしました。はっとして目を覚ましますと、枕元にさっきの茶釜がいつの間にか毛むくじゃらな頭と太い尻尾を出してちょこなんと座っていました。くず屋はびっくりして跳ね起きました。やあ大変、茶釜が化けたぞ。くず屋さん、そんなに驚かないでもいいよ。だって驚かずにいられるものかい。茶釜に毛が生えて歩き出せば、誰だって驚くじゃないか。一体お前は何だい？私は文福茶釜と言って、本当は狸の化けた茶釜です。実はある日、野原へ出て遊んでいるところを、五六人の男に追い回されて、仕方なしに茶釜に化けて草の中に転がっていると、またその男たちが見つけて、今度は茶釜だ、茶釜だ、いいものが手に入った。これをどこかへ売り飛ばして、 みんなでうまいものを買って食べようと言いました。それで私は古道具屋に売られて、店先にさらされて、散々窮屈な目に遭いました。その上何も食べさせてくれないので、お腹が空いて死にそうになったところを、お寺の和尚さんに買われて行きました。お寺ではやっと手桶に一杯の水をもらって、一口にがぶ飲みして、ほっと息をついたところを、いきなりいろりに乗せられて、お尻から火あぶりにされたのには、さすがに驚きました。もうあんなところはこりごりです。あなたは人のいい親切な方らしいから、どうぞしばらく私をうちに置いて養ってくださいませんか。きっとお礼はしますから。うんうん、置いてやるぐらいわけのないことだ。だがお礼をするってどんなことをするつもりだい。へえ、見せ物でいろいろ面白い芸当をしてみせて、あなたにたんとお金儲けをさせてあげますよ。芸当って一体どんなことをするのだい。さあ、差し当たり、綱渡りの軽技に、文福茶釜の浮かれ踊りをやりましょう。もうくず屋なんかやめてしまって、見せ物師におなんなさい。明日から担当金が儲かりますよ。こう言われて、くず屋はすっかり乗り気になってしまいました。そして、茶釜の勧める通り、くず屋をやめてしまいました。その明くる日、夜が明けると、くず屋は早速見せ物の支度にかかりました。まず、町の盛り場に一軒、見せ物小屋をこしらえて、文福茶釜の綱渡りと、浮かれ踊りの絵を描いた大看板をあげ、太夫元と、木戸番と、工場医を自分一人で兼ねました。そして、木戸口に座って大きな声で、さあさあ、大評判の文福茶釜に毛が生えて、手足が生えて、綱渡りの軽技から浮かれ踊りの不思議な芸当、評判じゃ、評判じゃ、と叫び立てました。往来の人たちは不思議な看板と面白そうな口上につられて、ぞろぞろ見せ物小屋へ詰めかけてきて、たちまち満員になってしまいました。やがて拍子木が鳴って幕が上がりますと、文福茶釜がのこのこ楽屋から出てきて、お目見えのご挨拶をしました。見ると、それは思いもつかない大きな茶釜に手足の生えた化け物でしたから、見物人はみんなあっと言って目を丸くしました。それだけでも不思議なのに、その茶釜の化け物が両方の手にからかさを刺して扇を開いて綱の上に両足をかけました。そして、重い体を器用に調子を取りながら、綱渡りの一曲を守備よくやってのけましたから、見物人はいよいよ感心して、小屋も割れるほどの喝采を浴びせかけました。それからは何をしても、文福茶釜が変わった芸当をやってみせるたんびに、見物人は大喜びで、こんな面白い見せ物は生まれて初めて見た、と天殿に言い合って、またぞろぞろ帰って行きました。それからは文福茶釜の評判は方々に広がって、近所の人は言うまでもなく、 沿国からもわざわざわらじがけで見に来る人が毎日毎晩大変な大入りでしたから、わずかの間にくず屋は大金持ちになりました。そのうちにくず屋は、こうやって文福茶釜のおかげでいつまでもお金儲けをしていても際限のないことだから、ここらで休ませてやりましょう、と考えました。そこである日、文福茶釜を呼んで、お前をこれまで随分働かせるだけ働かして、おかげで私も大したお金持ちになった。人間の欲には限りがないと言いながら、そうそう欲張るのも悪いことだから、今日限りお前を見せ物に出すことはやめて、元の通り無林寺に納めることにしよう。その代わり、今度は和尚さんに頼んで、ただの茶釜のようにいろりにかけて、火あぶりになんぞしないようにして、大切にお寺の宝物にして、錦の布団に乗せて、至極安楽なご隠居の身分にしてあげるが、どうだね。こう言いますと、文福茶釜は、そうですね。私もくたびれましたから、ここらで少し休ませてもらいましょうか、と言いました。そこで、くず屋は文福茶釜に、見せ物で儲けたお金を半分添えて、無林寺の和尚さんのところへ持って行きました。和尚さんは、ほいほい、それは奇毒な、と言いながら、茶釜とお金を受け取りました。文福茶釜もそれなりにくたびれて寝込んででもしまったのか、それからは別段手足が生えて踊り出すというようなこともなく、このお寺の宝物になって今日まで伝わっているそうです。
I'm drowning out here, guys. You guys better sound your song pretty soon.
Rise!
Yeah.
For Peter Show, last music for this edition, Pink Mountain with the Red Lion. Then Few reading Bunbuku Tea Kettle. Kind of lucky one, huh? Monk's Tea Kettle. And then Lozenge. Yeah, you would think reading an old timey folktale ain't music, but it is, people. Lozenge. Whence we began, okay? We gone the whole sideways eight, huh? We did the full. Snake eating its tail with Big Jesus Trash Can. Now, there's a birthday party song called this. Or Bad Seeds. Oh, is it a cover?
Yep. It's the only. Yeah, we only played two covers ever. One was a Ruins tune, and one was that one.
Ah, Ruins. Great band.
Yep. Yeah.
And so is birthday party. I got to see him. I didn't see him with the. I first got turned on him from Prayers on Fire. And that drummer left, so Mick Harvey, one of the guitar guys, went to drums, and I saw that at the Roxy. And they played Stooges. They played Loose.
Yep.
It was a great band. And you know, now Nick makes music with Warren Harris. Ellis from Dirty Three, and incredible. He's doing music up the Yang. And you know, we were talking about organ teachers, right? Piano teachers. You became a music teacher.
Yeah.
So, do you think any of your students have fucking horror stories about you?
Oh, boy. Probably.
No!
I mean, I hope they're the right kind of horror stories. I mean, if anything, I try too hard to be too encouraging just because I've got too much empathy for my own good. Like, I have seen, I don't know, I guess I've seen, like, so many different corners of the music world that I, if anything, I'm in danger of not pushing a given kid hard enough in one particular direction.
Can I ask you about one kind of direction? Do you do any composing?
I do.
Great. Because I have a big problem with that, because in the 70s, right, me and D. Boone were 13 in 1970, no one in this town, Pedro, wrote their own songs. Not one motherfucker. And so there was no culture of it. And so we didn't know that music was actually for expression. We thought it was like building models. You know, it kind of looks like the real thing, but it ain't. So you do push composition.
I do, and I push improv, too.
That was the other thing I was going to ask. Because, in a way, that is a form of composition in the moment, right?
Yeah, and, like, for so many, especially classically trained musicians, I mean, this is changing. It's changing slowly, but it's changing because people are pushing it, you know? I had this idea as a young, like, oboe students, like, oh, I can't improvise. Like, you know, I at least had Ornette and Coltrane in my ears, which, you know, most classical players don't, right? So I worship that music, but I figured, like, oh, I can't do that. That's not for me. That's like only jazz musicians who have jumped through the flaming hoops and gotten cut and have gotten, you know, only they are allowed to improvise. And it was like, we're backing up to Rice one more time just for a second, because it was mostly through listening to records that, like, I started discovering folks like Anthony Braxton, Roscoe Mitchell, Art Ensemble Chicago, George, like all the folks from the AACM.
Yeah.
And hearing that, like, that to me was the bridge, because a lot of that music superficially sounded somewhat more like, you know, weird, esoteric, avant-garde European composition of the mid-20th century. So, like, I would hear that, and I was like, oh, wait a minute. Maybe I'm allowed to do this after all. Like, maybe the oboe could have a place in here. And it wasn't until I went to grad school, I got a master's in Ann Arbor, and it was when I started
Stooges
there.
Town.
What's that?
The Stooges were from Ann Arbor.
Oh, I know. A lot of weird stuff happened there before I was there, that's for sure. And some weird stuff while I was there, actually. We were saying when we were off mic that I've been enjoying going back through the old playlists, like all the, like Twig Harper, Aaron Dillaway's, like those dudes were in high school when I was in grad. So I saw like some of the, you know, earliest Wolf Eyes shows and stuff.
Oh, I gotta tell you, Brother Kyle. I got to have you back on because I ran out of fucking time.
Yeah, let's do it.
Yeah, because we didn't get to talk about all these projects, and then I can have you on, bring even more projects and more
Sounds
to talk
great.
About, and we cleared out the old stuff. But it's been such an honor to have you aboard, truly.
Likewise, Mike. Thank you so much.
Right back. People, July 3, 2021, at the Dishwap Pedro Show, keep your powder dry.